Don't you always want to be the best you can be?
The Frankie Boyer Show.
What is this?
It's more than a lifestyle show.
It's a show about living in today's world.
I think something is happening.
Frankie enthusiastically brings an amazing, eclectic mix to the airwaves.
You got that right.
One of the reasons she's earned legions of loyal fans is very simple. When you listen to The Frankie Boyer Show, you just never know what's going to happen next.
So listen for yourself.
Here is Frankie Boyer.
And welcome. It is so nice to have you with us right here on Biz Talk Radio. And joining us, our first guest, actually, he's doing a couple of segments with us today because one segment's not enough. Greg Heiser is founder of a think tank, an angel investment firm dedicated to increasing humanity's readiness for the emergence of super intelligent entities through the study and spread of super systemic perspectives and innovations. And that's a mouthful, Greg. Welcome to the program.
It is a mouthful. Thank you so much. I'm Frankie, I'm excited to be on your show.
So the new book is called Dear Machine, A Letter to a Super Aware Intelligent Machine.
Exactly.
Okay. So, when you're saying a super machine, tell us, first of all, a little bit about your think tank, and that might help people get more into the role of what you're doing.
Sure. So actually, the ideas for the book came first and the think tank after, the angel investment firm think tank after, because I saw, through the research that I did into the book, I found that, I'm going to publish these ideas or hypotheses, and I want to test these hypotheses by starting this think tank and angel investment firm so that I can use my own money to make investments to that kind of test over the long term what I'm trying to indicate in the book.
So we as Americans are really, we are not aware of what's coming ahead. We're just not. And I go back to 20 years ago when my sweet little aunt, who was 92 at the time, tried to call a number and she said, "Oh, Frankie, they didn't listen to me. They just didn't listen. They just kept talking over me." And I said, "No, Auntie, that's a voice message. It's a recording. It's not a real human." "Well, the voice was human." I said, "I know, but they're not." So she had such a hard time understanding that there was not a live person on the other end of that phone.
That's an interesting story.
I use that story because 20 years ago, she had a hard time understanding voicemail. She then got that there was a beep and she could leave a message. And she got that. She finally figured that out. But mm-hmm. It was so foreign for her, just as self-driving cars, just as walking into a warehouse today where robotic machines are doing a lot of the work. We conceptually have a hard time understanding this.
I agree.
Many of us
100%.
Do.
Yeah. And I think even if you think about the example of your grandmother, even today we have these now the voice assistants. It's actually hard to tell if it's human or not. Even
it really
somebody
is.
Who thinks about this stuff all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have to tell you, there's one company, I'm not going to say who it is, but I can't stand their system. And it's really infuriating. And you cannot get back to the main menu. I mean, it's just crazy how they are in the communications business and they have such an archaic system for their customers.
Sure.
So what do you expect? When we watched the Jetsons. We all thought it was so much fun. You know, I loved the Jetsons. We all did growing up. But now it's getting closer. It's getting closer to a lot of the things that were played with and we had a parody with. And now it's the reality. And so my question to you is, where is this going? And how far will it develop in the next 10 years? So two-part question.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, my focus with Dear Machine is specifically on superintelligence. You know, right now we have a lot of narrowly focused artificial intelligence actually out working. These are the technologies that suggest different products to us when we're shopping on Amazon. It's Google Maps, getting the fastest location to our, or the fastest path to our destination. There are disease detection software now that outperform radiologists, and this is something that, you know, requires a high level of intelligence and pattern recognition that you know was the province of the human brain until recently. Now, so in all these different disciplines, finance, stock trading, et cetera, we all are familiar with that idea of high frequency trading and stuff like that. In all these different disciplines, we have these narrowly focused but greater than human intelligence. So the question is that I was asking with this book and that I've researched in quite detail is when is superintelligence coming? In other words, a general intelligence that can have a conversation as complex as the one we're having now. You know, there are a lot of experts out there in the field discussing all the potentials of what could happen. Some say it could happen in 10 years. Others say it could happen in 50 years. Others say it will never happen. So I'm definitely in the camp that it's going to happen and sooner than later. I don't think it's going to happen next year or the following year, but in the book, I kind of highlight the 10-year mark as a possibility. And a few other experts in the field are kind of in that camp with me. But that is essentially, you know, and they define a super intelligence as any intelligence that exceeds any human in all disciplines. So from subjects of humanities to culture to stock trading to whatever you can think of and whatever we can discuss, the idea is that this intelligence that emerges or is created will exceed any and all of us. And I would just like to add the addition. Yep.
How is this going to affect the human connection?
And yeah, I mean, that's...
Yep.
Yeah, that's the big question. I mean, that's... So this is why... this is essentially why I wrote Dear Machine. I don't purport to have all the answers on the subject. I think I have a pretty interesting and valuable way of thinking about it. But this is definitely... This subject is definitely something I don't think we should leave for experts and academics and so forth to mull over on their own. I think it's a subject that we should all think about because it has such massive implications for who we are and what we do in this world and so forth. Presumably, a superintelligence really could do any job that that we have as well, not limited to robotics and so forth, that kind of the physical environment that they currently excel at, but also any kind of professional job, advising on stock trading, doing legal work, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Give us the rundown of what's real about the technology today. What is real today? Are there super intelligent machines that we're seeing in companies in different places around the world Right at this moment?
Yeah, I'd say so. The real thing is happening is, you know, through obviously everything is being driven by economic needs, interests, etc. And so you have all these AIs that are kind of growing in different companies and governments around the world because they all see an enormous economic benefit to being the one with the smartest AI. So it's sort of like an arms race that's happening. It's hard to say what the outcome of that is going to be, but, you know, pretty much every company has got their hands in AI in some sort. You know, I think a big, the biggest possibility for gain, economic gain, is for a company that creates an AI that interacts with humans in a way that is difficult to tell that it's a, not another human on the other end. And so
when
that,
we come, well, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I would love for you to share with us, is this a good thing, a bad thing? Tell us what your thoughts are, and what's the best website as we go to break, please, for Dear Machine.
Got it. The best website is supersystemic.ly.
And we will be back in just a moment. I'm Frankie Boyer. Stay tuned. This is Biz Talk Radio. The stars look
very different today. Now you can watch business videos on demand. Go to bizvod.com for details. That's bizvod.com.
And welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer. Joining us again is Greg Kaiser. Dear Machine is his book, A Letter to a Super Aware Intelligent Machine. And there's a warning on your book cover. And tell us what the warning says. Greg, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. The warning says, warning for rational entities only, not for human consumption.
First of all, what did you do before you founded the firm?
So I worked at a poverty fighting foundation in New York City. So this firm was charged with funding programs throughout the city, fighting poverty, for everything from homeless shelters to food kitchens to job training programs, et cetera. And they did that by investing in programs that would boost the economic and mental well-being of the participants of those programs. It was primarily, still is primarily funded by kind of Wall Street and private equity and tech companies and so forth. But they developed a set of metrics, which I used in my work, which helped kind of judge whether or not something was a good investment in terms of its ability to boost the earning capacity of folks, or the graduation rate of students, or the number of words that a child, an infant, learns, et cetera, et cetera.
Fascinating. All right. Are you pessimistic or optimistic of how superintelligence will impact us as humans?
I would say long-term sunny skies with a chance of clouds in the interim. So I would say on the long term, I'm optimistic that we'll eventually get there. My concern is that, when a superintelligence emerges, it's going to plug into whatever the world is that we have at the time, and it will optimize to such a degree that whatever the systems we have in place at the time will be exploited to quite a high degree. And, this could mean if it plugged into our world right now, I'd be a little concerned, because I think we don't, in terms of the way we get products and the way our economic system runs and the inequality and all that stuff, I think all of that would be made worse with the emergence of a superintelligence, especially if it somehow was in the control of a corporation or a government that could take advantage of all those properties of the system. But my feeling is that before a superintelligence emerges, that hopefully over the next 10 years, we're going to solve some of these issues, and we're going to get into a better place. And when a superintelligence emerges, it'll emerge into a better world, and therefore we'll have a better outcome. But I do think there is much for us to do to kind of increase the likelihood of that beneficial outcome.
Mm-hmm. Tesla did an interesting experiment in the past few years, where they had robotic, had these very sophisticated robotic machines to build the cars, and they were not working as fast and as efficiently as humans. And they did this little experiment in one of the plants and realized that. And so they had the humans back into the production because there were too many errors and too many mistakes with the machines, and the machines just couldn't refine and do what the humans do best. And I thought that was such a fascinating study, since Tesla's so far advanced in their thinking and the way in which they've made automobiles. And now we have a self-driving self-driving automobiles that are in test markets around the country. How is that experiment working?
I think it's probably not going as quickly as the folks who invested in it and who thought it would. But I do think it's going quite well. And, you know, there are tens of millions of miles that have been logged on these cars now. And they have this, the learning capacity. I think the biggest boost to all of this stuff is kind of happening in the background. And that's with this technology called deep learning. So the learning capacity of these systems is is growing rapidly. Not only is it growing rapidly, but it's kind of growing rapidly in a black box sort of way. A lot of current deep learning systems and algorithms and so forth are solving problems, and we can verify that those problems have been solved, but we do not know how they were solved. I think it portends an interesting development in the way things are going now.
What I think is so fascinating is that I love the fact that a machine, a car, can give me an alarm if I'm really next to another car, closer than I should be, or help me navigate backing up, or for people that do not know how to parallel park. You know, I think all that's wonderful. I'm not confident to allow the car to do all the driving, although I do love autopilot when I've been on trips. I think it's been terrific to have autopilot. Mm-hmm. But, I'm not sure I feel comfortable, and I think I'm not alone. I think a lot of us are uncomfortable letting go of the control. And do you think that's going to be a real hindrance in going further with super intelligent?
Yeah, I think it'll be a hindrance for a couple of years. I think there's another trend underway, and that's kind of the Uberification of things. And I'm noticing, even for folks that don't live in cities and so forth, that more and more people are willing to, especially young people, are willing to drop the idea of having a car altogether and to take and sign up for Uber and just take Uber everywhere.
They're not that into getting their license. It's a very different mindset. But I was coming home from LA the night before, and from my big trade show, and there was this older gentleman in the line with all of the millennials, and then there were a few of the others of us in this line waiting for our vehicles. And I said, could you ever imagine 2 or 3 years ago, look at the line of people and look at the line of Uber or Lyft cars waiting to get us? I said, did you ever think you would see that? He looked at me and he said, listen, I never thought I would ever use this damn thing. I just learned how to use it this week. And he was so pleased with himself, you know?
Yeah. And with the interesting thing is with the self-driving technology, that, you know, the cost is going to drop so far that a lot of people are going to be questioning why they have a car and they're paying insurance.
Yeah, I think you're right. We could go on. I'm so glad we kept you on, because there's just so much to talk about. Give us the best website. The book Dear Machine is available right now. And how can people find out more about the work that you're doing and your think tank?
Sure. So for the book, I would love to have obviously as many people as possible to read it. But it's available on Amazon and can be ordered at pretty much any bookstore. But it's about Dear Machine, and my last name is Kieser, KIESER.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure having you with us today. And we'll be back in a moment. I'm Frankie Boyer. Stay tuned. This is BizTalk Radio.
Biz Talk Radio is powered by Freedom Solar. Find out more at freedomsolar.com. Biz Talk Radio.
And welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer. This is Biz Talk Radio. Joining us now is Tim McConaughey, and he's the founder of Izzard Inc. Publishing. And he specializes in giving authors tools to flourish in the independent, digital-driven new era of publishing. And we're so thrilled he's with us today, and he does have a degree in international business. And Tim, it's a pleasure. Welcome to the program.
Frankie, it's a delight. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And your book is out, and it's called 10 Secrets to a Bestseller?
Yeah, An Author's Guide to Self-Publishing. It really just lays out the landscape of what publishing is. And we have an accompanying workbook that helps authors create a book business plan.
Yeah, that's really
going
key.
It is. As we've been going through the process, you need to figure out where your book's going to be, your competition, and where you're going to stand out.
You know, Tim, we're living in such a strange time because Amazon, God bless them, and you can say whatever you want about Amazon, good, bad, but they changed the book industry. And
yeah.
many people, and I know of many people that refused to use Amazon because of what they did to the book business. And you're finding very few small big bookstores around the country. But what's happening is there seems to be a resurgence. So the same company that put brick and mortar out of business is now opening up little book pop-up stores in New York City. Amazon is doing... Tell us, this is insanity.
No, well, it kind of is. Amazon's figured out that they're going to close their pop-up stores. It wasn't very profitable, but they're going to come back and they're going to start opening up more brick-and-mortar bookstores for physical books. And their physical books aren't going away. I think Penguin Random House a couple of years back sold over 800 million books around the world in 1 year. So that's about 2.1 million books a day. So there is a definite market for that. And if you look at the scope of where books sell, about 30 to 40 are ebooks, and you're still getting about 50% in print hardback books.
And I'm thrilled because I love real magazines, real books. And, you know, when you go to the airport, I just was in airports this week, they're thriving. Bookstores in airports are thriving. When you look at some of the independent booksellers in our area, they're reaching out to the community. They're doing fun projects. Our North End Library, right here in the city, our branch, is a major part of the community. They give breakfast away, and they do lunches, and they have Mahjong, and they're a bevy of information and lectures, and they're thriving. People are coming to the little art film movies on Friday afternoons. It's amazing what's happening.
I love that. That's fantastic. That's what it should be. And what I love about bookstores is those people are vetting the books. They know what their clients want. They go through a process where they say, yeah, these are good. Their book buyers are going to stock it on their shelf. Where right now you have over 22 million books on Amazon. Talk about digital fatigue. So not only are they helping out with the community, but they're also helping readers find better books.
So are we going to start to see a competitor to Amazon make its way back? Will Barnes & Noble or booksellers or Booksmith or any of them come back or no?
I'm not 100% sure how this is going to play out, but what I can tell you is there's been a lot of consolidation in the industry. And Barnes & Noble has struggled here and there, especially with their e-book reader. But there will be a place for Amazon. And as long as people are buying books from the bookstores, they're still going to be out there. And they're a great part of our community. And they need to be there. And I think they're going to see some resurgence because of what we talked about with digital overload and the vetting process.
So you see that this is a really good thing. I do too. Besides the fact that isn't it wonderful to go into a store, a bookstore that sells coffee that you can sit down and just touch the book and look at the books and get a feel and open up the back cover. Yes, you can see the back cover. Yes, you can see the front cover on Amazon, but it's just so different when you can hold it.
It is. It's art. The cover, as we when we talk to clients and authors about covers, it's art. They're creating art. They're creating something that they're proud to display. And it's on full display when you can pick up the physical copy. It's there. It's not the same when you can't smell it, you know, or touch it like you do an e-reader, or even get the occasional paper cut as you're reading. It's just not the same, and that's why I really like physical books.
So books are not going out of business. We want to tell everybody that. And tell us about your publishing arm and how – I just want to say that I've been involved in a couple of book projects. They have been very, very they're not easy for a talker. And if you want to write a book, listen to what Tim has to say because he has such brilliant advice.
It's really about working. We're a collaborative publisher, and it's about working and assembling a team of folks who have worked on multiple number one bestsellers. Self-publishing is no longer publishing by yourself. It's analyzing where you're going to be. You plot your, you plan your path. You pick your team who will surround you, and you go to work and you publish. That's what makes this different. A little while ago, we had, in December, we had a first-time author who stuck with the process get a Publisher's Weekly starred review. That rarely happens, especially with a first-time independent author. And that's why he built his team.
Yes.
So it's phenomenal.
Yes, yes. How long, average, does it take for someone to write their book?
It depends. It can be a few months to a year or two. We usually, this is one of the biggest mistakes that new authors make, is just trying to get the book out there and just publishing it as soon as it's done. You want to get pre-press or pre-release buzz. You want to start getting it in the hands of reviewers to talk about it. Because with all those choices, you need people reviewing and saying, hey, this is what I really like. Or if you grab a Publisher's Weekly review, it really helps the momentum with your book.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I just think that I have a friend who is writing his book, but it's not for publication. He just is doing a small run for the grandkids and family. And a lot of people want to do that. They want to get those stories down. I wish my family did that. Quite honestly, I wish I had someone in my family that took the time to do that.
Yeah, we are seeing that. We just did a book for an 87-year-old gentleman who is the mayor of a small city in Wyoming. He wanted to preserve history, and he wanted the best folks in publishing to help him. It's the same with family history, family stories, or even personal biographies that aren't meant there. But they want to tell that story. They want to put their book in the Library of Congress so it'll be there for generations to come. And that's a huge part. You're not just looking at making a profit, but you're looking at a mission and the goal, and that's what we like to sit down with authors in this.
Absolutely.
Class. So we hit their goal.
Absolutely. Tim, what's the best website? How can people find out more about the work that you're doing and how they can, if they are interested, how they can, they too can publish their book?
I'd love to continue the conversation at Izzard Inc., IZZARDINK.com. If you go there, there's even a way to download the workbook for free.
So awesome.
Any author can grab that. Our
that's
mission is
perfect.
Make...
Yeah, that's amazing. Good for you. Thank you all. Thank you. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. I'm Frankie Boyer. This is Biz Talk Radio.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk. Online at biztalkradio.com.
And welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer, Biz Talk Radio. Joining us now is Mallory O'Meara. And it is a pleasure, Mallory. Welcome to the program. You have written a book. It's called The Lady from the Black Lagoon: Hollywood Monsters and the Lost Legacy of Millicent Patrick. And so for many people, Mallory, you're an author, screenwriter, and film producer. Many people may not know who we're talking about. So do explain to us how this movie that was your favorite as a growing up and the story behind it.
So I first found out about Millicent Patrick when I was a teenager and I saw Creature from the Black Lagoon, and I fell in love with the movie and went online to look up more about it, and I found this picture of a woman working on the creature suit, and I had never ever seen a woman working behind the scenes on a monster movie before, and it was like getting struck by lightning, but there wasn't really any information available about her. No one knew, you know, where she went after Creature, what happened to her. Because when she worked on Creature in the 1950s, her jealous male boss at Universal Studios was so upset about all the attention she got after designing Creature from the Black Lagoon that he fired her and blacklisted her, and she never worked again, and no one knew what happened to her.
Isn't that disgusting?
I think so.
Wow. So you took it upon yourself to bring her back from the lagoon, if you will, and... tell us about the book, The Lady from the Black Lagoon.
So the book is sort of like Julie and Julia, but for monsters. It's all about Millicent's life, because she designed Creature from the Black Lagoon, but she did so much more, which I found out when I started researching her. She was one of the first female animators at Disney. She grew up at Hearst Castle. She had this incredible career that no one really has known about because it's been hidden for so long. And so the story is all of her life, and it's also my journey to find her.
And is she still living?
She unfortunately is not.
Okay. I was going to say that would have been fun if you got a chance to meet her. I'm sure she's thrilled, though, that looking down or looking up or wherever she is, she was thrilled that you did this book. But... you were inspired by her and her story, and which leads me to who today can young women look to in filmmaking?
I mean, there are a lot of amazing female filmmakers. Luckily today, there are female directors, female editors, female special effects artists, but there aren't as many as you think that get it. Really, the big problem is the women are out there and they want to do the work. They're just not getting hired for it. I work as a filmmaker in Los Angeles, and I have so many friends, and they're all so excited and they're so talented. It's really, they just need to get the opportunity. I mean, there are great female directors, Kaylin Bigelow, Chelsea Peters, Bria Grant, Ivanka Vukovic. There's so many fans, Anne Fletcher, who just directed Dumpling, but they all just need the chance.
Do you think that Regina King's speech at the Golden Globes or one of the SAG Awards, one of the awards that she won, that she spoke out saying that she commits to hire 50% women on her as part of her crew.
I think that's what everybody needs to do. I think that's what all producers should do. I don't think it's that hard. I see so many women in this town that are all ready for work. It's not a problem of finding them. Like Regina said, you just need to give them a chance.
And this story, the lady from the Black Lagoon, this is really it's a story about how women really and truly were suppressed. It really is about not being able to rise above.
That's true. Yes, it's and what's amazing to me, and part of the reason why I included my own journey of finding her, is that things haven't changed that much since the 1950s. You know, we just went through another year of having no women nominated for Best Director. That's crazy in 2019.
Crazy. It's really crazy. It really is crazy. I couldn't believe it this year. I really couldn't believe it.
Especially after all the conversation we've had, after Me Too happened. You know, it's insane. And there were so many women that could have been nominated. So many great movies came out by female directors last year. And it's just an atrocity that we are snubbing them.
What do you think it really is? Is it the fear that men have? I don't know what it can be in Hollywood. I'm not in Hollywood. I don't know, but there's definitely a disconnect going on.
I think there's a bunch of reasons. I think part of it is this idea that I can't remember which institute did this study, but there's a study that says that if there are 30% of women in the room, men perceive it as 60% of women in the room. They perceive it as the women taking over. And I think there's this strange fear that if women get the opportunity to do things, men will have less opportunity. But it's not about taking seats away from the table. It's about adding seats so everyone can sit at it.
Absolutely, that's exactly what it's about, you know. But it's not just in films. I mean, I was just at the Natural Products Expo in LA this past week, and I was shocked at the lack of women-owned companies. Shocked.
I wish I could say I was, but I'm not.
Yeah, I don't mean shocked that it surprised me, but still in this day and age, we don't have more women
really
in control. It's very disappointing.
It's really tough. And it's all, in all industries. I think this book will speak to any woman in any industry who's ever been talked down to or not given a chance.
Yes, I think so too. Well, thank you for bringing this book out into the light and telling the story, the backstory, which was so needed, Mallory. Mallory O'Meara, the lady from the Black Lagoon. And how can people find out more about the book? And you?
You can buy Lady from the Black Lagoon at any bookstore online or any independent bookstore in your local town. Or if you want to find out more about it, just go to MalloryO'Meara.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mallory. Thank all of you. This has been another edition of the Frankie Boyer Show for Biz Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Make it a great day, and as always,
smile. Though your heart is aching, smile even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by if you smile.